So here's a quick idea for everybody. I don't know, it might seem a little grim, but it's actually still a good idea. I remember in February of 2018 when my mom died, we went to the house, excuse me, the house that I grew up in, and it had changed quite a bit since I'd grown up, but then the basic elements were still the same, and it was something that I had taken for granted because it had been there pretty much my whole life, and it felt like nothing unusual to be in the house. What felt unusual was that my mom wasn't there. But and so then, we went through the process of giving away things and taking things ourselves out of the house to put into our houses or to put into storage. And eventually we put the house on the market and we sold it. And it was right around the time when we had completely emptied the house out and walking through it and realizing what the difference was, and that I hadn't even done a video walkthrough of the house, in the days after her death, to preserve it, because it felt like nothing remarkable to me at all. It never occurred to me, just didn't occur to me. But then, once seeing the place empty, I realized at that point all I would ever have of the house that I grew up in was a memory of what it was like. And as we know, that's imperfect, and well, it is what it is. It's what I have now. And I really regret not having thought of this, and there's no way to get it back. It can't be gotten back. So anyway, why mention that now? Well, things are really going to change. The people are showing videos. Reuters has a webcam pointing into Times Square right now, and there's almost no traffic in Times Square and almost no people. And Times Square, it's not like that. I mean, Times Square is a place that New Yorkers avoid in every way possible, because it's filled with non-New Yorkers trying to navigate New York streets, and that's a disaster. New Yorkers like to walk fast, and we have some place to go, and we want to get there, and but you can see already that the furniture is already gone to some extent. Maybe it's gone forever. Maybe the world that we build after this won't have a Times Square in it. It's possible. It's conceivable. Because we don't know what comes next. We don't know what comes next week, or the week after that, or the week after that, or and so forth. I mean, there are just so many huge variables. Gavin Newsom said yesterday, half the people of California he expects will get the virus in the next 45 days. Wow. That's the first time I'd heard that number. Never mind how many die. There's going to be a lot of them die, of course. But 45 days, and then what? How does a society function during and after something like that? And we're not handling this well, of course. I mean, the idea of bailing out cruise lines, I mean, that should be way the fuck down on the priority list, so far down that it's laughable to think that we would ever get to it. Because this comes, we have to also remember that this comes at a time when we were supposed to be fighting climate change, and we weren't. And this was the sort of fatalism of the world that we live in. I want to be clear that that's past tense. That was the fatalism of it. It's like, well, there's nothing that we can do to turn this society around. It's just going to keep going until something catastrophic happens. Now, in no way has anybody said that the virus is somehow related to climate change, although perhaps it is. It doesn't matter if it is or it isn't. It is here, and its effect is still here, even though our economy is collapsing and a lot of people will die. And what kind of sense? So let's say the cruise line business dies, or, you know, what would be the chances that we would recreate it? It was a total anachronism of the world before climate change. We ignored climate change. The cruise lines developed these monstrosities of ships. They were more like floating apartment buildings. They just got more and more bizarre every year. And I guess people like them. I don't know. I've never been on a cruise, but it doesn't matter. They just added so much carbon to the atmosphere for so little value. It's just a really bad deal. We would never reboot them. The airlines. Now, there's a moral reason why we shouldn't bail them out, because they've behaved very irresponsibly as companies. They've, you know, crippled themselves to the advantage of the shareholders and the executives of the companies to make them, you know, this is all part of the, the whole sort of 1% story, how the rich get richer. And it's obscene. It leaves them so that when a situation like this comes along, there's a choice that has to be made by the society. Do you save us or do you let us die? It probably even appears in their risk-benefit analysis that says, well, there's a 90% chance the country won't let us die, so let's go even more leveraged because we can take out even more money from the company and put it into our, you know, brokerage accounts. Well, I don't think we should bail out the airlines. I think we should let them die. The airplanes themselves won't go away. The airports won't go away. We own the airports anyway. And we'll buy the airplanes from bankruptcy for pennies on the dollar. And we'll say goodbye to those executives. And whoever owns them, well, let's just say we will own them, that they will be owned by the country from now on. Maybe you want to start another airline later. Maybe we'll let you. But for right now, this has been a really bad deal. And we have to control air travel. And that's there are ample silver linings around here that we're going to learn how to do what we do without actually having to travel all over the world to do it, to have what I was calling carbon parties. You know, I've only taken one airplane trip in the last year, and I hadn't taken one in probably a year before. I just don't travel by air very much. Excuse me. And where was I? Right. And it was very impressive. I went from Albany to O'Hare to Austin, Texas. And then I went from Austin, Texas to Philadelphia to Albany. And when I arrived at O'Hare, it blew me away. It just like, what? And I thought, look at all the carbon everybody's burning. It's like everywhere you look, it's just a party. It's just like, let's see all of the wasteful things we can do to destroy the environment. It really did make that impression on me. I have to say, I'd gotten far enough away from that lifestyle to have that reaction. We're all going to have that reaction when and if, however we come out of this. And, you know, the however we come out is another thing to talk about that will very much influence not just whether we survive it, that's all anybody's talking about, but how will we come out of it? You know, depends very much on what we do. What I have said and stand by, I'm not an economist, but this is common sense, is that the first priorities of things that we pour our trillions of dollars in, that's what one economist said, well, don't you worry about the deficit? And he says, no, why should I? Fuck it. If we come out the other side and worry about the deficit, then we won. That's how dire this is, okay? So the things we prioritize in terms of the money we spend on them are the things that are most likely to still exist when we come out of this. It just makes sense, right? We have to figure out a way to provide a supply chain for various necessities. Well, what are those? Those are food, electricity, medicine, internet, communication is what I really mean. And did I say housing? I mean, obviously. And that means, for sure, that we have to start distributing money to the endpoints of the economy. It is so obvious, and it's like ridiculous to think about giving money to corporations. It's just ridiculous. What they'll do is they'll give it back to themselves. And we'll say, oh yeah, that's capitalism. But this isn't capitalism anymore. This is an economy, a banking system, a currency, a civilization that is trying to recreate a system that will keep itself alive while we survive this pandemic. And it's not certain that we will survive the pandemic, by the way. And people aren't telling you that, but it is quite possible that this thing will just keep mutating and that your immunity won't mean anything. And it'll change, and it'll change its ways of propagating itself and the proportion of people that it kills. You know, I heard a professor of the history of medicine from Yale University. I heard him on the Radio Open Source podcast a couple of weeks ago. And this is a man who studies the history of medicine. He studies the history of other things too, but obviously brilliant man and very knowledgeable. And he's studied quite a few of these pandemics and also is familiar with the science of it. And he says, well, you know, you may not feel like it, but we got lucky. This isn't right now the worst case, although it's got to seem like it, right? I mean, it does. Because we live so high on technology that if you pull out any of the sort of support to the system, the whole system just crumbles, you know? So, we got lucky because this wasn't the one that wipes out our species. And, you know, something to be said for preparing for the one that does. We could prevent that, actually, it seems, by being super prepared for it. And so that should be one of the things we put on our to-do list. Before airlines and cruise ships and really rich executives who, like, you know what? Fuck you. I mean, the thing is that do they really think that there's going to be anything to spend money on in the world that we're looking at? I mean, don't they have anything at stake in keeping the system running? Or do they just want to pull their money out? I mean, these are really ridiculously stupid people. I mean, there's no brilliance to it. I often wondered, do they have some secret plan that I don't know about that they're going to somehow be able to weather the situation after the climate crises start piling up on each other and we have no ability to cope with any? I mean, you know, it almost happened this summer or whatever, a few months ago in Australia. They had a fire season there that was running out of control. I mean, completely out of control. It was a shock. Had that happened in California, I think we would be thinking about this very differently right now. So, yes. So if we spend money on the supply chains for food and medicine and healthcare, and we survive the virus, then what we will be left with is a system that has, gasoline. Let's throw gasoline in there too, because that is how we get around. Or however you get around, let's provide something for that, even though at this point we don't want people doing that. maybe not gasoline. I mean, I need gasoline to get my food. And so I'm going to say, let's put gasoline in there. Even so, look what's happening with climate change. All of a sudden, you know, had you ever said a month ago or 6 months ago that, yeah, you know, it's not so dire. The situation with climate change is not as dire as we thought it was because there could be a global pandemic. And side effect of the global pandemic, even though it's going to kill a shitload of people, is that the air is going to be clean. Carbon is not going to be going up in the atmosphere at the prodigious rates that it's been going in, and we will have turned the corner on climate change. You know, I'll tell you what it's like. It's really interesting. You know, I had heart surgery in 2002, and I was a smoker and overweight and not exercising enough. And, you know, it was coming. And so, you know, I got the surgery, and I was weak as a kitten. And I never smoked again. That was the end of my smoking. And it had a side effect. I lost a shitload of weight. I was in good shape after this. It just because my body used so much energy and healing after this obscene wound was, you know, cut in the middle of my chest, that it had to get the energy from somewhere, and it basically, I became skinny, and I felt great, actually. Once the wound healed, I was in fantastic shape. It was remarkable. I felt better the day it happened. I mean, even though, like I said, I was weak as a kitten, I could barely walk, I immediately felt better. And I think in this spring we may discover that we feel that way too, in some ways. But we have to do this right. That's the thing. Anyway, so where this started was my mother's house, and the house I grew up in. And here we are in our house and the house that we grew up in. And we ought to somehow document it before it changes and before it disappears. And I want to put that out there that, you know, it might be a good idea to start listing. I mean, we've all got the time for this now, right? Is to start listing things that we should take pictures of, or that we should write about, or now writing about, we'll remember, but things that we'll want to document in some fashion before they disappear. Times Square. Maybe we can't support big cities anymore. Fuck, that would be terrible. Let's say we can support big cities, because that you know, I mean, we need to get to a place where we can support big cities. Let me be clear about that, because too much reinvention, I don't think we can do. So think about it that way, too. Anyway, I put enough ideas out there for one day, and thanks for listening, and talk to you later. Bye-bye.